Hi, everybody, and thank you very much for checking out Telich Talks. This week, we are going to have our eyes to the skies and have on Mr. Andre Bernier, Channel 8, Cleveland, Ohio, longtime weather forecaster, the man who, in a very young age, was on the new Weather Channel many, many moons ago. He's been at Channel 8 almost 37 years, and that is coming to an end. He is calling it quits, as it were, or we joke maybe there's different ways to phrase it, but he's going into the next chapter of his life. So we talked about so many things, from the eclipse that's coming up within less than a week now, as I post this on Monday, April the 1st, and so many personalities that he had a chance to work with over the years. The biggest star of them all, of course, the great Dick Goddard. A lot of topics, his faith, and so, so much more. I hope you enjoy our conversation. But first, of course, I remind you to hit that follow button, rate, subscribe, review as best as possible to help me cheat those algorithms a little to get more folks to come and check out Telich Talks. So without any further ado, the great man himself, the man who is the host of the Weather Jazz podcast, among other outstanding talents, Mr. Andre Bernier. What an absolute delight to have the pride of New Bedford, Massachusetts?
New Bedford, Massachusetts, yeah.
Mm-hmm. New Bedford, Massachusetts, the one and the only Andre Bernier on the podcast with me. So great to have you on, Andre. We go back many, many moons, and you're coming to a point in your life professionally where it's time to shift gears, isn't it?
I like the way you put it, or one of our other colleagues put it, we're rewiring. And yeah, it's time to do that, and I'm looking forward to it. Something that I never thought would actually arrive. It's kind of a curious thing, curious part of life. It's like watching the end of a reel-to-reel tape. Same amount of tape is going through the head, but that last reel is going real fast.
And you know that once the reel goes, it's off the machine and it's on to another. You got to get a new reel. You got to start it, right?
Exactly right. A brand new reel, and it'll be fun to put that brand new reel on there.
Well, things began for you, ironically, as you were saying before we started recording, your last day at Fox 8 coming up here in less than a couple of months or so is going to coincide with your 65th birthday, right?
And that is, I don't like to use the word coincidence, because I really truly believe that there is nothing in life that's coincidence.
Okay.
So when we were planning my exit from Fox 8, my exit from television, I told Andy Fishman, our news director, I said, hey, let's just make it a real even Steven June 1st, so that way I can enjoy the summer. And he said, oh, no, let's make it the last day of the May book, the May ratings book. And I said, well, what day is that? And he goes, I don't know, we'll figure it out. And sure enough, got the contract back, and I was curious when this day was. I opened it up, and I started to laugh. And he said, what are you laughing at? I said, May 22nd. That is my 65th birthday. And he says, no. I said, yeah, it is. So there's nothing in coincidental in life. It's all divinely planned, and I just shook my head. I said, Lord, that's a really good one.
Well, you said divinely planned, and you have such strong faith. 20 years ago, you became a pastor. You went through the theological training and what is necessary. And how did it open up things for you in your life in the last 20 years?
Oh, it's been wonderful. And really, when I stopped to think about it, my career as a television meteorologist was really a side note. It wasn't the main thing. I thought it was the main thing. Mm-hmm. And indeed, it was a way to earn a living. Sure. But I suddenly realized in the 1990s, early 90s, that the Lord was calling me to use my notoriety for his glory and to fill pulpits. And as I slowly delved into that field, I realized that it was an interim ministry. And I've had now 5 interim pastorates in different places in Northeast Ohio. And that's what God has called me to, is to plug the holes and to help people transition from one senior pastor to the next one.
Well, that is really cool that you have the ability to do that, because you have to be incredibly adaptable. And I also think you as a little boy becoming so fascinated by the heavens, what's up there, the clouds and what have you, probably precipitated the life that you are living here up to age 65 and forward, and the wonderment of it all, right? What's up there? Why are those clouds the shape that they are? And how come the wind is so strong? Is that kind of a thing that happened with you? You started like talking about the weather when you're like a little boy.
Yeah. And to go back to my very early years, first of all, I spoke only French until I was about 4, 4 and a half years old. My parents are French Canadian, and they said, let's teach them French. I was born in the States, by the way. They said, let's teach them French first, and then we'll teach them English. And then suddenly at 4 and a half, they said, he doesn't know English yet. I think we better teach him that before he goes to kindergarten. And so at 4 years old or so, I had a young friend whose name is Paul Lemaire. Even though he was had a French name, he did not speak French. He spoke only English. But you put two boys with a couple of trucks in a dirt pile, and, you know, there's magic to be had. We had fun. And language was not a barrier until one day. Apparently, there was a thunderstorm approaching.
Okay.
And the dark clouds really, really concerned me. This is the story my parents tell me. And I stood up and I looked and I pointed and I said, regarde le nuage noir. And my friend looked at me, kind of cocked his head and said, those are black clouds. And I said, no, c'est le nuage noir. And a peewee fisticuffs started. And both parents had to pull us apart and find out what was going on. And I was pointing at the black clouds and saying, le nuage noir. And here's this kid saying black clouds. Well, nuage noir means black clouds. Ever since then, my mom and dad said, I was always looking up at the sky going, what are those clouds going to do? What is the temperature? When are we going to hit 80 degrees? When are we going to see snow? I mean, it was constant. And they thought it was a fad. You know, 3, 4, 5 years later, when I'm approaching 10 years old, I'm still fascinated with the weather. And they said, this is no fad. Then one day I saw somebody on TV pointing at the maps and talking about what the weather was going to do. And I said, what's he doing? And they said, well, he's giving a weather forecast. And I said, he gets paid for that? And I said, yeah. I said, I want to do that. And the rest is history.
It really is. You go to college, then you, Andre, you jumped right out of school and had a job in Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Right.
At my old station, we're both alumni or alumnuses. I never get the right, the correct term there, but we both worked at WMT, which became KGAN. And you're right out of college. Give me an idea of what that was like for you, because you weren't in Cedar Rapids very long. You went to that the Weather Channel. Take us through that portion of what went on with you.
Well, it was the spring of 1981 when the tapes that I was making back then, you know, big bulky videotapes, you had to send for video resumes all over the country. I was really hoping to stay in the Northeast somewhere. Everyone said, take every job opportunity you can and send a tape out. You just have to get that foot in the door.
Yep.
And I saw a job opening, Cedar Rapids, Iowa, WMT. I thought, Iowa, well, that sounds interesting. But at that point, I was sending tapes out left and right, and yeah. I didn't know what I was sending out. I thought, just send something out there. I sent something out there. Well, I get a call from the news director, Bob Jackson, saying, we like your tape. Let's chat on the phone. And chatted on the phone, and he says, you know, I think we'd like to have you out. And so while I was still a senior in college, I flew out on a weekend, and I was there actually the day President Reagan was shot at the hotel in Washington, D.C. I think that was at the end of March 1981. And we had a great interview. Yeah, and he offered me the job, and then President got shot, and suddenly the interview was over. He said, come soon. We need you. And so that was my first job. But I want to take you back to the interview itself, because he said, here's the tape that you sent. Would you like to look at it with me? I said, sure, because I can't remember what I sent you. And so he plopped the tape in. And I was mortified because it wasn't my best work. And I thought, this is horrible. This wasn't a tape that I ever intended to send out. However, I was talking about drought indices, talking about the farmland, talking about moisture content.
Oh, and you're nailing that.
Yeah. He says, you seem to really understand the concept of what farmers need. And I said, well, you know, it's basically what we were taught in college. You know, you have to put all the pieces of the puzzle together. And he says, that's what we liked about you. You seem to get farmers. And I went, oh boy. And I would have never sent that tape out. Again, divine intervention that I happened to send out a tape that I would have never sent out in the first place.
Wow, that is amazing. And it's really cool, too, to even reminisce, Andre, about the whole process of getting jobs way back in the day. Nowadays, you know, I mentor a lot of young broadcasters to be and what have you, and they can just send me a link. Here's a link, my latest reel. It's right there. I can look at it on my phone or on my iPad or whatever. And I recall sending out, I was an intern at WAKR-TV in Akron my senior year. And I didn't have really many anchoring tapes, you know, to send out. So they allowed me to come in. And it was such a rudimentary, very basic tape. Me on a set. I talked about Pete Rose. They flashed up a slide of Pete Rose, you know. And I mentioned the Cleveland Browns, and there was a slide of the Cleveland Browns. It was just so basic, which I'm sure you look back and see your stuff was probably super basic as well. Yes. Nowadays, the technology is just really amazing what the kids have to work with. And there's so much talent out there, too. I mean, we could speak to the young staff that you have been working with at Fox 8. That's a great group of outstanding meteorologists.
Oh, without a doubt. Things are changing at breakneck speed, really, when it comes to technology. I often look back at when Dick Goddard was our senior meteorologist, and I was much younger man. I came to Cleveland at age 28, and here I am 65. But when Dick was with us, and I was much younger, I was very well adapted to the computer world. And whenever we got a new computer system, I was always excited. It's like, great, you know, new technology. And Dick Goddard was always shaking his head going, oh boy, another computer downgrade, here we go. But now I get it, because things are happening in the world of technology so fast that I'm having trouble now keeping up with things at age 65. And and now I get it. It's like, oh, here we go, another computer. And let's hold our breath and let's see if we can make this thing work. So I get it now. And it's amazing that that curve just keeps getting steeper and steeper and steeper. And these kids are having to learn it. And of course, they're thriving in it. And but that steepness is really an interesting slope for somebody who's a senior now.
Yeah, but it's cool. It's, you know, it challenges you and it's something to explore. And that's kind of what you've done. You know, you went as a kid up in New England, you probably thought Nor'easter. That was the big technology that you or phenomenon that you talked about. You come to Cleveland and it's Lake Effect. Oh, the almighty Lake Effect. Mm-hmm. What's your love affair or hate affair been with Lake Effect? And then how did Dick school you in the intricacies of dealing with that monstrous Lake Erie that affects our weather so much?
He always preached to anybody who was coming into the department that you had to get all the ducks in a row for Lake Effect. And it was more than just wind direction. It was more than just the temperature difference between lake and air. You had to get all of these elements in a row. And if you didn't, Lake Effect would be minimal at best. And at first I didn't get that. And then after many busted forecasts of Lake Effect, Dick kind of shook his head, see what I told you about Lake Effect. You've got to have all the ducks in a row. Now, one of the cool things that I liked about Dick is the way that he was colorful in the way he described how to forecast a Lake Effect. And he had some good ones. He says, forecasting Lake Effect snow is like trying to flush ping pong balls down the toilet or trying to put socks on a rooster. I mean, things that were, you got the fact that it was really, really hard, but a lot of fun. And every place has its idiosyncrasy. Northeast Ohio has Lake Effect. I once had a job offer at KUSA in Denver when I was at the Weather Channel, which I didn't take, but I talked to the meteorologist there. And I said, I've never forecasted in the mountains like this before. And he says, don't worry. He says, every place has its little idiosyncrasy. Ours is mountains. Within 6 months, you'll get it. In the Northeast, it's the nor'easter in the wintertime, which was the big bugaboo. In the Southeast, in Atlanta, when I was at the Weather Channel, it was severe weather season, typically March and April, that were that element that was really tough to forecast. So every place has its nuance, but fortunately, I've had 36 and a half years where I've gotten used to Lake Effect and know it pretty well now. So Dick always said it was important to stay in one place so that you could really understand the weather in that one place to forecast the weather.
Well, boy, he's so right. And I think also you could say that personally speaking, on the sports side as well, you know, to be in our market for so many years and to know the nuances of the different teams and the ebbs and the flows and why fans are upset at the Guardians or what's going on with the Cavs. And you the same way, you know, people dealing with Lake Effect here not just in the wintertime, but, you know, what we've had some crazy lake or I should say just weather events in recent times. How do you keep up with that?
With weather technology or with
with the technologies specifically?
I'll tell you what, that there are new computer models that are coming out every day and new techniques of examining the weather. And as long as you stay on top of those, do a ton of reading. And anymore, there's just a ton out there. And there are new parameters every day that come out that you have to study and which ones I use, which ones other meteorologists use. Being old school now, the old school method of forecasting, I tend to gravitate toward those things that really work, but I'm always paying attention to the new parameters that are coming out. And I'll tell you who has really assisted me in that is Scott Sable. He was my intern. When I was in my 30s here, he was going to University of St. Louis for meteorology, and he stays on top of the latest parameters, especially with medium and long range forecasting for seasonal forecasting. He is just, his brain is phenomenal. He can keep track of all of those things. So it's good to surround yourself with people that can stay on top of that and brief you. So that's one of the ways that I've stayed on top of things. And of course, conversely, the kids are always about the new stuff, the new technology, the new parameters. But we're the ones now that's saying, don't forget the old stuff, because the old stuff is of value too. And if you employ both together, you get a pretty good product.
I think you do. And Andre, it's kind of cool too to make an analogy between what you deal with, and the weather is very, very important. You guys are on so much during our newscasts and what have you. People want the information. But I also liken it to, like, in sports, you know, more and more we're hearing about, you know, the analytics and the counting of the numbers and why LeBron is more effective going to this part of the court to shoot a certain kind of a shot. But yet, In baseball, it could be the same way, you know, the bullpens, how they line up. But I always remember the successful ones are the ones that could combine the intuition, that the gut feeling, you know, Terry Francona, just trusting my instincts to keep this guy in for one more batter. And you guys in the weather department dealing with all the, you know, the models are saying this. I heard you on, want to tell my listeners, you've been hosting a podcast for 605 episodes as we record this, the Weather Jazz podcast. It's very popular and it's very entertaining. And just yesterday when I was listening to you, you're talking about the models for the big event coming up, right? The eclipse. And you said the models from the day before are entirely different from the ones I'm looking at today. That's really, it's the sneaky tough part of doing your job these years, just trying to forecast things that people want stuff so far in advance, when, you know, maybe the old schoolers are used to just putting a stick in their finger in their mouth and putting it out to the wind and see which way the wind's blowing.
It's tough because you're right. This is the kind of the audience today, which is becoming, I think, more weather savvy and understanding, hey, there are computer models that do this. Well, computer models are helpful, but as I mentioned in the podcast yesterday, and thank you for mentioning the Weather Jazz, it's guidance. It's not the Gospels. And as I like to say, there are only four of those, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and they're not going to be able to forecast what the atmosphere looks like 30 days away, even though they do go out 30 days. So you have to understand how to interpret them. And one of the best exercises in college that we ever did, back then the computer models were much more rudimentary, but they were still very complex. And so one of our professors says, I'm going to make you appreciate what those computer models are doing. I'm going to have you do one kilometer grid square, which goes from the surface to the top of the atmosphere. And I'm going to have you compute by hand what the computer does for a 12-hour period.
Whoa.
And yeah. And it took us a week to do what a computer back then would do in maybe 30 or 40 or 50 minutes. But it made us appreciate, first of all, what the computers are doing. But it also made us appreciate the nuances, the negative nuances of those models. In other words, there's a margin of error, and you have to understand how those models factor in the margin of error. If you can see the errors, many times you will recognize that the models are not doing a good job, and you'll know how to make an adjustment. I'll give you one quick example.
Okay.
When I was in college, we were looking at the computer models showing a big storm, big snowstorm for New England. And we lived in northern New England, Vermont at the time, where the college was. All the students were excited. Oh, look at this. Look at what the computer model. Our professor, Dr. Joe DeLeo, walks in. He looks at all of the stuff. He is holding his cup of coffee in his hands. And as he's walking out, he goes, "It's not going to happen." And he walks out. And we're all like, what? And we were trying to figure out, but the computer models say that we're going to have a big storm. Well, the weekend came and the storm never came. And he let that fester in our minds. He did not explain until Monday what he saw. And he says, you have to understand how the models work. And if you understand how the models work, you can pick out when they're not doing a good job. And he goes, this is how I knew the models were not doing a good job. And it was a great lesson.
Oh, that's a tremendous lesson. And you did give the same kind of a lesson in a, obviously maybe a much shorter span of time on your pod yesterday when you're describing, you know, how people across the country, maybe or maybe not, it's the greatest idea to try to find an area that you know is going to be, you know, totally sunny so that the effect of the eclipse is going to be that much more amazing to you. What advice do you have for people, you know, a week or so out? This is going to post on, ironically, April Fool's Day, Monday. What do you, you know, we're a week away, basically, on April the 1st from the eclipse. What's your gut feeling or just how do you look forward to it?
Well, nowadays, the modeling has improved so much that by about the 1 week period, you're starting to get a better idea as to who will get what. It may not be precise, but you're starting to get a good idea. Until then, really, well, you heard yesterday, the models are flip-flopping every 36 hours. And we had showers in the mix for April the 8th here. And then, of course, yesterday we get breaks in the clouds. And, you know, which one is it going to be? Well, we don't know yet. we may not know for quite a number of days. But if they really wanted to position themselves in a place that gave them the best chance to see the eclipse, in that case, you go to climatology. The long-term picture, what is the best chance that along that path you're going to see the greatest probability of seeing the sunshine on that day, April the 8th? So you look to climatology. It's a broader study, but you may position yourself in a good way. My friend, Bob Gilmore, he's going to be driving down to Texas. I said, okay, that's a good spot because traditionally, you will have a 60 to 75% chance that you're going to have a sunny day here, down there. Whereas here, your chance of seeing a completely clear day is closer to 30%. You know, which one are you going to go to if you had the chance? Well, you go to the place they afford you the best chance of seeing things. So you err toward the side of climatology. By 3 days out, you can make some adjustments if you need to. You know, go along the route. Well, it's going to be cloudy in Texas. Well, let's go to Arkansas, or let's go to, you know, Illinois or somewhere else.
Well, you told me in sports terms, we're very behind in this basketball game. So let's put a bunch of 3-point shooters in our lineup to give us a better chance of coming back in
there
some way.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Always to bring it to sports. All right, Andre, we mentioned Dick Goddard a few times, and I don't want it to just be a case of like a mention here or mention there. What kind of an impact do you long-term did that man have on our market and on our station? I always talk to him as being the supernova, the biggest star that we've ever had. But you work with him all the time. And of course, we loved him and we kidded him and we gave him grief all the time. But you know, what kind of a mark did he have in this area?
When I first saw Dick Goddard, I saw him in the summer of 1979, when I came out to Northeast Ohio in the summer to see my then girlfriend, Sally.
Sally.
And
your bride, your wife.
Right. She's from Northeast Ohio. And so during the summer, I said, I'd like to come see your, you know, visit your family and see what Ohio's all about. So I took the train out here with Amtrak from Boston and spent the week. And I saw this guy, of course, everybody at Sally's house. They're big Channel 8 fans, New Center 8. And yeah. So I watched this Dick Goddard, and I thought, wow, he's good. I said, not only is he good, wouldn't it be fun one day to work with him? And wow. And I thought it back then. And that opportunity came up. But I did not know Dick until I went to the Weather Channel. Now, Dick Goddard was a huge Weather Channel fan. Go figure, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he loved watching the Weather Channel. And so we got connected somehow. I can't remember how we got connected, but we had a bowling team. Actually, we took up, I think, like 12 lanes every Thursday night, and it was just the Weather Channel League. We were that big.
Huh.
And we formed a team, and we said, what should we call ourselves? And I suggested, hey, let's call ourselves the Woolly Bear Watchers.
Wow.
And I'll call Dick, and I'll ask him to send Woolly Bear stuff. And he did. He sent Woolly Bear stickers. He sent Woolly Bear shirts. And so whenever we were on the lanes, we had our Woolly Bears all over the place. That's how I got to know Dick.
Wow.
Well, I moved to Minneapolis, and it was in December of 1987. We get a call in the weather office. At that time, I was working with Sally, husband and wife weather team in the mornings. And Sally's mom said, hey, the plane dealer says that they're still looking for a meteorologist for their new morning show. I went, really? I looked at Sally. I said, I'm not under contract right now. You want to go home? And she goes, yeah, let's go home.
Wow.
So
that's awesome.
I called Dick. I said, Dick, if I sent you a tape, would you personally bring it into Virgil Dominic?
And our boss.
Yeah. Virgil, yeah, our boss. And he, oh, by golly, oh, yeah, I'll do that, Andre. And so I sent in the tape. He brought it into Virgil. Well, Virgil popped in the tape, looked at it, and called me within a day or two and said, how'd you like to come for a visit? I went, yeah. And it was a matter of, I think it was like 8 days from the time I sent the tape to this time I was flying back from Cleveland with a contract offer to come to Cleveland. Yeah.
It happened that quick. And then not that long after, Sally found employment, as it were. She was on 43, I believe. How did that work?
She eventually went to 43. She stayed in Minneapolis until the house sold. The station was real very gracious. They said, look, you know, we can't match the offer. And by the way, who's the news director? Virgil Dominic. And then Tom Kirby, the news director in Minneapolis, said, you need to take that job. And he says, keep your nose clean and you're going to finish your career there, because it has a reputation of hiring people and keeping them there.
Yeah.
And he knew that. And I didn't know that, but he did. He said, go for it. And you're going to do great. And he said, not only that, you know, Sally will stay here until your house sells. As soon as your house sells, then I'll release her from her contract and she'll go join you.
Wow.
And that happened in July of 1988. We were on our way home and we checked in with Sally's mom. Hey, hurry back home. Mark Kuntz, the weekend meteorologist, broke his ankle. And they need you back quickly. So I told Virgil, I said, Mr. Dominic, Sally's a meteorologist too. And he said, well, we could use her to fill in. And so immediately she was filling in for Mark Koontz on some of those weekends. So
yeah,
briefly. And then she went over to Channel 43 full time for about 6 years and then came back to Channel 8 to do Sunday mornings when we had our son.
What was that like, just the both of you in this market? Sally's a Northeast Ohio gal, so personally speaking, it was always great to work here for me because my family was here and I grew up here. Same for her. So you're making your name at Channel 8. She's doing her thing at 43. And, then of course you have Noah coming into your lives and all the wonderment of having a kid. What was that like? Just, you're both on the air at the same time. Kind of cool.
It was really cool in the sense that people didn't understand the connection at first. And then they said, well, Sally Bernier, Andre Bernier, but she's on 43 at night and I'm at Channel 8 in the morning. Which, by the way, was a perfectly natural way not to have kids, because our schedules were just all over the place, and so natural birth control is what I called it.
I hear you.
Yeah, but then people made the connection, and then of course then things started happening. We became a Fox affiliate from CBS. Everything shook up.
It sure did, boy. Wow.
Fortunately, I remained at Channel 8, but Sally did not remain at Channel 43, which became 4319. And suddenly, there was an opportunity for her to work on Sunday morning. So they said, well, why don't you're married. Why don't you just both come to the same station? So Sally spent a good number of years at Channel 8 doing the Sunday morning weathercast.
Yeah, it's you guys have had a real cool run, and you in particular to work with the great Dick Goddard, to have the staff of, as I mentioned, outstanding young meteorologists, and I know you and I have always kidded each other at nighttime. I would do the sunset for Lou Maglio to get him all upset in the newsroom, and he would make a big production out of being upset that I was doing the sunset announcement. And you were so kind to kind of hey, let me take over a little bit of this. Yep. And are you still torturing him, or are you out the door before the sun sets?
Well, during the winter, the sun had set long before. But now it's coming into the season. So I said, Lou, before I leave on May 22nd, that every sunset I see from your window, and he's got the perfect window for the sunset.
Does.
Every sunset I see, I'm going to announce to everybody in the station that the sun is setting and they better get to Lou Maglio's window pretty fast. And he's... He's just so funny. He says, Andre, one of these days, I'm just going to toss you off the roof of Fox 8.
Sometimes I think he's serious, but no, I'm kidding. And that's the beautiful dynamic. I don't think success just happens. I think, you build a staff, and that's what Virgil did. He built a staff, and we all kind of like, more like family than anything. One of our compatriots, our buddies, Bill Martin, it's been 5 years now since Bill retired. That was a great dynamic that y'all had on the air, that we had, kidding around in the newsroom, Bill calling me the dumbest man in broadcasting as a joke and all the time. But working with him on the air, it's cool to have talents like Maglio and especially Bill that are just so you have no idea where they're going. And in many ways, that's kind of a fun thing.
And that was key in the switch and transition from CBS to Fox, because when that happened, the audience was so confused as to where everybody was. And it was suddenly we dropped from number one to number four behind Leave It to Beaver. and it was like, well, where is everybody? And then Bill Martin saw a potential. He says he went to go see the general manager back then. He says, let me have control of the 5 p.m. No, it was the morning show. Let me have the total control of the morning show. I'm going to make it zany and crazy and put us back on the map. And the GM said, all right, you have total control. Don't worry if it gets too zane. Do what you need to do. If it gets too crazy, I'll come and get you. But he said, do what you need to do to get us back on the map. Well, he started doing crazy things like cutting my tie in the middle of things of that nature and making waves. And sure enough, within 1 year, we were back at number one. Yeah. And it worked. So, Bill had that intuition that he just knew what would work, what would be funny, but yet still get the news across. I mean, you want to be serious when you need to be serious, but he understood that you also had to have fun and people had to see that you were real. And he had that gift.
Yeah, he sure did. And I know he's enjoying himself down in Florida with his retirement. And he, like yourself, had other irons in the fire, I guess you would say. You being so involved with being the interim pastorships that you've had, and Bill, juggling a few different balls as well. I think that's kind of cool when you get to be our age, is to be as open to as many possibilities as possible. What's in your in the headlights for you as you will be transitioning from TV? You'll obviously continue doing the great Weather Jazz podcast, but what else is going to be floating your boat, as it were?
Well, you are correct. Weather Jazz will still exist, and I'll still put out episodes, just as you're doing with your sports podcast, which is doing very well, by the way. I get feedback from others all the time, and I loved your interview with Virgil Dominic when you had him on, and I learned things about Virgil that I did not know, and I thought,
Me too.
This is really cool. So we've got the podcast going. I'll probably still be involved in local radio. But as you can see, I've got a studio here. I won't have to drive to the radio station. I can stay right here and keep the camera off if I'm still in my PJs and bed hair and coffee breath, which nobody will see or smell or hear. They'll just hear my voice. And I'll still be involved in that regard. But there are also some things that I've always wanted to do and or return to. I had a raised bed garden when Noah was very young to teach him how to garden, but it just got to be too much. Well, now I'm going to have the time to grow our own food here in the backyard. Nice. And so in fact, I've got my Johnny's seed catalog right here.
Oh, there we go. Got some research.
Getting ready to order my seeds and to do that. I'm learning how to play the handpan. Have you ever heard of the handpan?
What in the heck is that? What?
it looks like an oil drum. It sounds a little tropical, like an oil drum. It has nine notes and you hit it. And but it was developed about 30, 35 years ago in Switzerland.
I'll be damned.
It's called a handpan. And I saw an 11-year-old prodigy play the handpan. And I went, wow. I said, I want to learn how to play it like that kid.
Wow.
And so back in Labor Day, I went over to Sweetwater in Fort Wayne and picked up a handpan and brought it home. And so I've been slowly but surely learning how to play the handpan. So these little things that I've always wanted to do, but just never had the time. I'm finally gonna be able to do that and study. I've got friends in Iceland, so studying the language and trying to converse, be a little more conversational in Icelandic. And that's yet one more thing that's going to be on my plate.
What is the wonderment that you have, or the passion that you have with Iceland? What give us two or three or four things that really captivate you about Iceland? Because you do seem to be talk about a lot and fascinated by it.
Yes, Gilar Íslensku bara smá.
Okay, so what's that?
I said, I'm slowly but surely understanding more and more Icelandic with time.
Nice.
But my fascination came actually pretty early on. I was always fascinated as a youngster with the Arctic and what it would be like to live in the Arctic. And back in 1987, just prior to coming to Cleveland, me and a friend went to Iceland for 3 or 4 days, just as, hey, let's go see what it's like. And so we did. I loved it. And so did my friend. And we made friends there and slowly but surely started going back to visit, expanding our friend base. Most of them spoke English, but they helped us with our Icelandic, which is a very difficult language. But I love the weather up there because it's so far north. They get crazy storms. The wind is always a factor, but they get the aurora borealis often at night, or the midnight sun, which I experienced once with Noah. It's treeless too. The only trees that are in Iceland are those that were brought there and planted, because trees were not native to Iceland. The big joke in Iceland is, what do you do if you get lost in the forest in Iceland? You know what you do?
Plant a new forest?
No, you stand up. You stand up. and you'll find out where you are. Because there aren't many trees there, because there's so much wind and it's so much lava. And of course, I've always wanted to see a volcanic eruption.
Did you not do that recently? No,
I did. We were up there in December, and the friend that I first went with in 1987, he went with me this December. We went up there for a concert, young artist, Jon Jonsson, huge artist there in Iceland and northern Scandinavia. He said, I'm having a concert, come and join us. So we did.
Wow, that's cool.
On our last day there, we got up very early, 4 a.m. I'm having coffee. My friend comes out. He's got his radio next to his ear. He goes, you hear what happened? I thought, what happened? And he goes, the volcano blew up and they closed the road in Reykjavik and the airport. I thought, well, we have a flight to catch. Let's hope they open up the road. Let's just go. So we drove. Fortunately, by the time we got to the point where they closed the road, they opened it back up when they realized the lava wasn't going to overtake the road. But it was right there. It was 0.7 miles away from the road. We see lava shooting up into the air, hundreds of feet. Awesome. The whole sky was back then, it was December, so it's perpetually dark. So the whole sky was glowing red and orange. And so I got to see my first eruption.
That is fantastic. So obviously you're going back again and again, I'm assuming. And what other places you want to explore?
Wow. Boy, you know, the Faroe Islands sounds like kind of a new spot. And Icelandair is now flying to the Faroe Islands. It's between Iceland and Ireland. But on my bucket list is Ireland. I'd love to visit Ireland sometime. Even though I don't golf, maybe they'll let me on to walk the golf courses. Other spots? I don't know. Those are the two places that come to mind right away that I'd like to go back. And of course, Iceland is always there because we have so many friends now there that we go and see. And they open up their hearts. And if they see that you are interested in their culture, wow, that opens up the door.
That is cool. Yeah, they keep that in mind. And you did mention Ireland. The bride and I are going. This will be my first trip ever. We're going in May. And she actually was able to be there when she was from age 10 to 16. She lived overseas, London for 3 years, Geneva, Switzerland for three others. And so there were occasions where she'd get to Ireland. She's 100% my Irish lass. So we look forward to that. And that's what, you know, retirement's been. It's given me a chance to do things in February when I couldn't before, because we, you know, had to be at the station for the book. And I'm sure you'll find many opportunities to do all kinds of stuff as you move on to retirement. One final question, my friend. What are your feelings, emotions, anticipations of that final day? I know it's not the end, but it'll just be the, you know, beginning of another chapter. But how you girding yourself for it?
When I first signed that contract, I knew it was my last contract. It was 491 days to the last day. That was a year ago, January. And initially, I was I thought countdown 491, countdown 488, countdown. I thought countdown. That sounds like it's a countdown to like nothing. And yeah. I said, no, I'm now calling it mile marker. It's a mile marker. Because when you're traveling, when you hit zero in the mile marker, you're in a new state. And that's what it's going to be. It's going to be a new state. And I did request that whatever is done for the May book, and I know they're unearthing all kinds of stuff in the gag reel and all that fun stuff. Some people have told me, oh, yeah, we've seen it. It's funny. I said, well, great. I said, whatever you do, especially the last day, make it a celebration.
Yeah.
And it's not a funeral. I've seen too many of those where they become funerals. And I said, I have no interest. And that takes me back to somebody that you and I both worked with, and that was John O'Day.
John.
And I still remember his last day, and nobody knew it. And we had the morning meeting right after the morning show finished. And after the morning meeting was done, he said, oh, I have something to say. And it was with John. And he said, by the way, this is my last day. I'm heading out the door now, and I'll see y'all later. And that was it. And there was no big thing. I said, I'd love to do it that way. I don't think the station would want me to do it that way. That was kind of a fun way to do it. It's like, John, oh my goodness. And, and he was right. Once he hit the door, maybe hear from him every once in a while, but that was it. And he was done.
Yeah. And done is done. And, although I had never got that memo, cause I still do Friday night touchdown, which I'll continue to do. I love to do it. If you have a passion, and mine always was the high school football and the great scene that we have here in Northeast Ohio. And Andy is so generous and has been, hey, stick around and do that thing. Absolutely. Those Friday nights in the fall are joys for me. So I always look forward to that. But I look forward to hearing all your good adventures as you go forward with the Weather Jazz podcast. And as you close things out at Fox 8, always a wonderful friend and a tremendous broadcaster. First and foremost, you wouldn't have lasted this long if you didn't really carry the freight each and every day, and all the anomalous propagations and all those different terms that you would fire at us, and all the years with you and Goddard and Kuntz and Sabes and all the young great meteorologists, just a great crew, great family that we've had at Fox 8, and you've been one of the mainstays. So I just want to tip my cap, or maybe my headset here, towards you, Andre. All the best to you, my friend.
Thank you. Only by God's grace did I survive one place for 36 and a half years, seeing so many changes. And so I'm just so grateful and thankful that God led me here, and that I was able to stay here for as long as I did. And it's fantastic, but it's not over. I don't know what this next state will look like, but I'm looking forward to exploring it, just like you. Except that one thing I'm not gonna do is take an ice bath every day.
Well, you do like Iceland, so maybe that's your homage to ice, going to Iceland a lot. All right, I will sign off. All the best, my friend, and hope to talk to you soon, Andre.
Great. We'll do that soon, and I'm going to have you on Weather Jazz next.
You bet.
Thanks very much to Andre. The career, as it were, on Channel 8 television comes to a close on his birthday. That would be May 22nd of this year when he hits the big 6-5. All the best to you in your retirement. And thank you for listening. Just having a blast doing these interviews with both former colleagues or individuals in the sporting world that I had the opportunity to cover for so many seasons as a sportscaster at Fox 8 here in Cleveland, and inspiring people that I've met even across the globe, as it were, who take up amazing projects and potential situations where they can be successful in a very arduous physical sense, if you will, and then go out and do it. Those are the people I just enjoy talking to, and I hope you like the messages that they bring as well. Thanks for listening, gang. We'll see you next week. Have a great one right here on Telich Talks.